The Jewish Hour can now be heard on jcastnetwork.org, your portal to Jewish broadcasting. It's also on iTunes and on your smartphone using the Stitcher app.
So 8 days long, said Moses to Pharaoh, oh, let my people go.
Welcome to the Jewish Hour. I'm your host, Herschel Finman. We are getting ready for Pesach. It's not that far away. Just a couple of weeks. Believe it or not. I look and see the startled look in women's eyes when I tell them, you know, the Seder's only 2 weeks away. And they go, oh! The panic sets in. But anyway, now I did that to myself. But anyway, in this half hour of the show, we're going to be interviewing Elizabeth Kurz, who has written a cookbook. She's a food person. She's got a blog called gourmetkoshercooking.com. It came out with a book called Celebrate Food Family Shabbos to Benefit Emuna of America. And we're going to talk about that. We have lots of music. I got some pretty eclectic Passover music coming up. I passed one by a certain person and said, what do you think of this? And the person said, just brought me to tears. Maybe it'll bring you to tears too. The portion of the week is the portion of Metzorah. It is found in the Leviticus chapter 14 and following. We have an awesome Hasidic story at the end. Before we do anything else, let's go right to the news. New testimony was given in the case of the soldier who 2 weeks ago shot and killed a wounded Arab terrorist in Hebron, minutes after the terrorist stabbed a soldier. The soldier's commander testified that the soldier followed IDF protocols over concerns that the terrorist was moving to detonate a hidden bomb belt thought to be under his unseasonably warm coat. I mean, he's wearing a heavy coat to cover over the fact that he's wearing one of those bomb belts. The stabbing attack was prevented by alert police in Jerusalem as they arrested an Arab terrorist on his way to the Damascus Gate of the Old City. The terrorist admitted that he intended to stab someone, which is why he was carrying a knife. An IDF armored bulldozer drove over a mine planted near the Gaza security fence, but miraculously, the vehicle and its occupants were unaffected by the blast. I guess that's the armor coming in handy, but they say it's a miracle. Who might argue? And finally, Ernst Tremel. You don't know that name. You probably never hear it ever again. Ernst Tremel, age 93, a former SS guard, died a week before he was scheduled to go on trial for his role at Auschwitz. Tremel was a guard at Auschwitz from November 1942 to June of 43. And that's the news.
Some of the best jobs in the world are in the radio and television industry, and you too can join the workforce in as little as 8 months when you complete your hands-on training at the Specs Howard School of Broadcast Arts located in Southfield, Michigan. At Specs Howard School, students get to play and learn at the same time. Imagine spending your class time behind the microphone, spinning music and hosting your own radio show, or designing and lighting a set for your own TV program, running a camera, learning to edit, directing a program. When you go to Specs, your day will be anything but dull. And if school is this fun, imagine how exciting it is to work in the growing industry. In addition, the credits you earn while attending Specs Howard School are currently accepted at 14 area colleges and universities. If you've always wanted the best job in the world, call for a tour of Specs Howard School at 248-358-9000. That's 248-358-9000. Or visit them on the web at specshoward.edu. Specs Howard School of Broadcast Arts. This is where you start.
Why go anywhere else when you can go to One Stop Kosher? Located on Greenfield Road, just south of 696, you're never far from One Stop Kosher. At One Stop Kosher, you'll find the largest selection of Passover products in Michigan. One Stop Kosher carries thousands of kosher for Passover items, and over 100 Passover items are on sale now. They even have kosher for Passover pizza, hamburger buns, and cake. One Stop Kosher has the largest selection of kosher for Passover wines as well. It's One Stop Kosher on Greenfield Road in 696 for all your shopping needs. Herschel Finman, here you are listening to the Jewish Hour. We have Elizabeth Kurtz from GourmetKosherCooking.com. Just came out with a cookbook called Celebrate Food, Family, and Shabbos. And that's what we're going to talk about. How are you today, Elizabeth?
I'm terrific. How are you?
Good. Thank you so much for taking out some of your time. I know it's pre-Passover for you too as well, and appreciate the time that you're able to spend with us.
It's my pleasure.
Thank you. Anyway, so I've asked this question in various different genres before, but really never had a chance to really discuss Jewish food. I have never seen a restaurant called a Jewish restaurant. There's kosher restaurants, of course, all over the world. And these kosher restaurants have various different cuisines, depending on what they're trying to hawk. You know, of course, there's kosher Chinese and kosher Italian, and there's deli and, you know, something that might be called Hamish or European. But right. So what makes Jewish food Jewish, or is there no such thing?
No, I think there is such a thing, but I think it's hard to put it all in a bucket called Jewish food. Listen, there were 12 tribes, right? And there's certainly lots of different minhagim amongst all our people. So it's hard to say exactly what Jewish food is, because we have Sephardim and Ashkenazim, and we all have different traditions and different takes on that. But I would answer that, you know, Jewish food is really what is a part of our religion and our culture of the Jewish people. So things like apples and honey and dates and pomegranates are synonymous with Rosh Hashanah, of course, and the obvious of matzah is synonymous with Pesach. So that's what, you know, that's really how Jewish food is connected to Jewish tradition. And that's in some communities, really, that's what kids remember the most about a holiday until they're old enough to understand the messaging and the laws. They remember the foods that are a part of that holiday, and that becomes translated from generation to generation. But then the question is, what makes, you know, that doesn't mean that Jewish food doesn't have to be delicious. And we certainly have, you know, the parts that are more, I guess after 25 years of diaspora, we've traveled around the globe, so Jewish food has certainly evolved.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so then you would say that Jewish food in Italy would be Italian, and Jewish food in Poland would be Polish, and Jewish food in Morocco would be Moroccan, then, I suppose.
I think that's more true in America today. I think that there's certainly an Italian spin to Jewish food, and there's an Italian spin to Jewish food in Italy and in Morocco and all those things. But there's such a cultural aspect of food throughout our tradition. I mean, it's written about in every sefer. It's certainly, you know, something that is universal across all different types of Jews. So there has to be much more to it than just, oh, we're in Italy and basil grows beautifully here, so we eat more pasta and more basil in Jewish food. There's something much deeper about the memories and the tradition of Jewish food. And I just think it's evolved over time. It's evolved through different cultures and different histories.
Is it? Would you say, Elizabeth Kurtz, that there's a distinctly Jewish flavor which is common throughout all these different cuisines? Like, I'm reminded, there is a Rashi comments, and he says that Jews are the people of the garlic, and that there's garlic in everything. But that, I don't know if that's exclusively Jewish. If you have garlic, you put it in because it tastes good.
Right. So I teach so many cooking classes around the country, and I actually think the Jewish palate is so many of the foods that people are, you know to be Jewish foods. Chicken soup, roast, you know, given our restrictions with Shabbos and Yuntiv, we tend to make roasts and sauces because we want to make things ahead of time, and they have to be reheated before Shabbos. So you're not always making, you know, a grilled steak before Shabbos, because that's not going to reheat all that well. And I find that's most interesting to me, how that's become part of our palate. Sweeter roasts, kugels, gefilte fish. So much of it is around the restrictions or the rules of preparing it. And that's what's kind of shaped our palate. And one of the things I do in a lot of my cooking classes is I go around the country and I try to broaden the Jewish palate. I try to bring other food trends in. And that's one of the newest things. And I don't know if you want to call it Israeli cuisine or Jewish cuisine. There are some very, very well-known chefs that have become like all the rage in the culinary world. And they've really changed, you know, what people consider Jewish food of falafel and Israeli salad to much broader flavors. And that's become infused in many Shabbos tables and in many homes.
Okay, you're reminding me. 1977, when I first became religious, so my mother actually agreed to make Passover, having absolutely no clue what she was getting in on having
Your poor mother. That was a big, big feat to take on.
Oh, she had no clue. And at one point, the rabbi of the synagogue actually called me over, and since you said that, she responded that way. She said, There's one thing about getting rid of the chametz, the crumbs in the couch, but he said the way that you're treating your mother is creating more spiritual chametz. Like, take it easy. Will you?
Yeah, so. Right. What a special person that she really wanted to be with you and make it so that you could celebrate share the history.
Okay, so at one point, so we had this rule, since I became firm through Lubavitch, and there's this rule, that this custom that we do is if you can't peel it, you can't eat it if it grows.
Right.
Okay, that's
right.
just our doing, not that there's anything wrong. So my mother said, well, what about broccoli? And I said, well, can you peel a broccoli? And she at that point called up the rabbi's wife. Now, she and my mother and this rabbi's wife were both born in America in 1925. My mother was born in Newark, and this Rebbeson was born in Borough Park. And I don't think there could have been a space between them further than it could possibly be as far as culinary tastes. So she calls up this Rebbeson, this rabbi's wife, and says, why can't I use broccoli on Passover? And the rabbi's wife said, I don't use broccoli a whole year.
Right.
So it was like.
But don't you love that about the Jewish people, that you have Lubavitch, who have, you know, certain parameters in terms of mayonnaise and ketchup and peeled items on Passover, and then you have Sephardim who actually eat rice. I'm very jealous of them because I love rice. And then you have Ashkenazim who, you know, eat matzah meal and some don't. So I just love that as a people, there's just so much to the food part of our peoplehood.
Mm-hmm. So it was like there was this whole difference thing over there. And eventually, maybe about 5 or 6 years later, I was actually invited for lunch to the rabbi's house because I was all over the world at that point doing different yeshivas. And she served Friday night, she served brown rice. And I kind of looked at it and she said to me, Fenman, you don't know what brown rice is? I just said, Mrs. Gordon, I didn't expect to find brown rice in your house.
Yeah,
you know,
so right.
So there's this developing taste. It seems like, is this what's been going on for diaspora Jews for 25 years? I mean, at this point, you can't walk into a kosher restaurant and not get sushi.
Right. I think that as people, as our world has become, for better or worse, more sophisticated, as people have traveled the world more, people are more interested in better. I mean, look at how far wine has come. Remember, you know, 25 years ago, we were so limited in terms of the choice of wine. And now we get wine everywhere from, you know, France, Israel, Napa. I mean, you name it, you know, winemakers are making kosher wine. And the same is true for the consumer in the food world. Shabbos comes 52 weeks a year. The joy and challenge are making it delicious every single time. So, you know, some people, again, tradition is such a huge part of coming to the table on a Friday night or coming to any holiday table. But to serve the same thing week after week can get a little bit dull. So I infuse both tradition and new flavors, and I love seeing what's out there. I'm super inspired by food magazines and TV shows and visual pictures and so much on Instagram. And my mission is to say, hey, I can make that kosher. There's no reason that this shouldn't be something we serve on our table as well, as long as it's within the restrictions of kashrus. But there's so many flavors that can be transformed and really broaden the experience at the Shabbos table or, you know, even your weekday table, just because the food becomes more interesting.
Okay.
And I'm not even talking about things that are super out there.
Gotcha. Now, the Jewish Hour has been on air for 20 years, and we have been receiving cookbooks from publishers, kosher cookbooks, for 20 years. We have, it's more than a shelf of very wonderful cookbooks. Each one of them has mouth-watering pictures and all kinds of insights into kosher and festivals and Jewish cuisines of all sorts. I find myself, when I'm doing cooking, I do some of the cooking at home. I find myself now at this point, when I want to have a recipe for something, I pick up my smartphone, I put into the browser, recipe, fill in the blank, up comes a recipe, voila, bada bing, bada boom, bada boom. So I'm thinking, what's with cookbooks? Are cookbooks becoming sort of going the way of cassette tapes? But here you are, you're publishing one.
Right. It's a great question. So the Jewish market is actually unique. Unless you're absolutely right. In the mainstream market, unless you're a restaurateur or a real celebrity chef, it's or somebody who has millions of Instagram followers, it's really difficult to break into the published market today. But in the Jewish market, women love to review cookbooks on Shabbos, on the holidays. They open a book and they need to refer back to that salad dressing. So we still like that printed version. It's why magazines are still so popular on Shabbos as well. We read on Shabbos. We sit down and we look at the visual, not just on our smartphone, but really in real hardback format. So there's still a big market in the kosher world. And again, because we have year after year, we have this wonderful calendar that keeps us very engaged and very busy, we need to continually be re-inspired. And the last piece on that is that I also have a website and an Instagram, and I love posting on there, and I spend a lot of time on it. But you cannot compare the hours spent editing, re-editing, photographing, specialty photographing, editing the photos that go into a book, and the money that's put into it is so dramatic that you hope the result is something that's better tested, better edited, and better photographed than what is available for free online.
Mm-hmm. Okay, let's talk about your cookbook a bit. You first open up, one of the first things you notice are the pictures. And I'm looking for one of the first pictures is your fresh tuna chickpea rosemary salad. Okay, now what intrigues me about this picture is, it says in the recipe, cut the tuna into 1-inch cubes. And I am looking at this picture, and if I don't have a ruler in front of me, but I would say that these cubes in this picture are about 3-inch cubes. And the chickpeas in this picture are the size of cherries. So this is, I suppose you see in the labels and cans, enlarged to show textures, but there's a lot of place which is dedicated to what the thing that is being presented looks like. Why are we doing that, Elizabeth Kurtz?
So, I mean, you know what's funny is that in my cooking classes, I teach lots of different types of recipes, but I always note, I generally pick recipes, at least one recipe that's not photographed in the book. So why do I do that? I say right in front of my audience, I wanted to teach you about this recipe and I wanted to share with you how to make it and all the deliciousness that's in this recipe, because I know you're not going to make it because there's no photograph. People are very visual. They need to see exactly how something's supposed to look, exactly how it's supposed to be prepared, and that gives them just a sense of almost how it's going to taste. You want a food photograph to look like you want to reach into the page, pull it out, and take a big bite. And the visual is just so critical.
Uh-huh. It does say actually in the Talmud that a blind person has deficiencies in tasting their food because they can't see them. So
that's interesting. Yeah.
So here we are with that.
You see the wisdom in that. We put a lot into the photography. There's a wonderful, wonderful team I worked with in Los Angeles on the photography from two photographers and numerous food stylists. And they really work hard to authentically show you the depth and dimension and moisture in every recipe.
Okay. Now, in many cookbooks, I can't say every, because my wife is the cookbook person. As far as like sitting back and reading cookbooks, yes, my wife and my daughters enjoy sitting back, kicking back, yep. and reading, looking at cookbooks. That's true. And my wife
has earmark. They put little stickums on what they're going to make.
Yeah, or what they would think they would like to make, or maybe we could eat this, you know. And then, and there's also those weird, strange recipes that my kids make fun of. If it has like too much mayonnaise or cornflakes clumps in it, that's.
I'm with your kids, or the onion soup mix and things like that. Yeah, I'm with.
Actually going to bring that up probably in the next question, but. Every cookbook has recipes that you just look at and you say, there is no way I am going to exert that kind of effort to make that kind of thing. Maybe my grandmother might. My grandmother used to make something called Helzlach. I'm not sure if you're familiar with Helzlach.
I don't even know what that is. Okay. What is that?
My grandmother would go. This is talking, she lived in Newark, and in the mid-1960s, which was when I remember these things when I was a little kid, she would go to the chicken market. And she would pick up the chicken and say, I want you, Mr. Slaughterer, to slaughter this chicken for me. And she would watch this slaughterer like a hawk to make sure in her mind that he was doing it right because her father was a ritual slaughterer. And then watched and prepare it to make sure that she got the chicken that she picked out. Now, a freshly slaughtered chicken like this had a very long neck. And on this very long neck was a very long neck skin. And she would take the neck skin, which at this point would look like a tube. She would sew up one end of the tube with white thread. And she would stuff this chicken neck skin with a mixture of old challah, eggs, onions, and chicken schmaltz. And then she would sew up the other end of this white tube of chicken skin and deep fry it in chicken schmaltz. That was a helzel. So I guess you could
now,
call it stuff.
Now, what could be bad? What would be called fried chicken with stuffing?
We call them stuff grivenness. Yeah, it was Helzlach. Now, it would take her probably 3 or 4 hours to make 6 of them. And it would take me about 2 or 3 minutes to consume them all. So people are not.
I think it's funny though that today we would complain about a little few extra feathers on our chicken.
Yes.
You know, a few extra feathers, and look at the effort that went into that delicacy because all of you loved it.
Yeah, and like my wife, when I told her about this, she just like gave me one of these like looks and said, "I hope you don't expect me to ever duplicate that."
I don't know that I would make that either.
Because she is not going to, my wife is not going to stand there with a white needle and thread and sew up a chicken skin. It's just not going to happen.
No,
so
that sounds
when you picked your recipes, I'm assuming then that you wanted them to be things that people were actually going to make. So the question then is were there things that you're saying, nah, it's too complicated, I'm not going to get it.
I love that question. I love that question because, so for me, I've been running GourmetKosherCooking.com for, at the time when I started writing the book, 5.5 years, and now it's been, you know, almost 8 years. So I had the luxury of knowing what my readers wanted. And I know that most of my readers are people just like me. They're either, I'm a mom with 5 kids and I'm working, or I have a lot of young readers with young babies or people who are new to the kitchen. But what we universally have in common is we want fresh, wholesome, fabulous food with familiar ingredients done in a new way. We want to be constantly inspired and have new flavors, but it's got to be easy enough that I would make it every day, but special enough for any holiday or for Yontif. So that was the general theme. So originally, I had a few like desserts in the book, like a chocolate mousse pavlova, which is a meringue, which is actually something that would have been kosher for Passover naturally, but it's a meringue base, and you make the meringue base, and then you make 2 different types of mousse so that it's visually and just incredibly scrumptious. But if any one person opened that book and saw, you know, one dessert that had 5 different steps, or candy making, making homemade toffee, the same concept where you need a candy thermometer. Most people are like me, like my readers. They open it and say, oh, pachka, forget it. Can't do it, because they're making challah through dessert every week. And if any one item takes too much time, forget about it. It could ruin your whole Shabbos.
I hear you. Now let's talk about, there are cookbooks, and one of my daughters is on a part of a Facebook group, and she's really just stalking these people. I don't remember exactly what it's called. It's something like Quick Recipes for Shabbos or something like this. And every once in a while, she'll post something really absolutely obnoxious, which contains copious quantities of mayonnaise, right, onion soup mix, cornflake crumbs, you name it, Rich's Whip, etc.
Ketchup is a good one.
Yes.
Turkey sauce, right. Duck sauce.
Yes. All these type of things that are using all these like ingredients. Your cookbook, you don't have any of that. So what's with that, Elizabeth?
Kirsten? Okay. So really, I'm really into balanced, wholesome lifestyle. I think that one of the, you know, the biggest issues we have in raising children is teaching them to, you know, and the only way to teach them how to live a balanced, wholesome life is really to walk the walk. The other thing is, I really believe that, you know, parents sort of wreck their children's taste buds by giving them things that are cloyingly sweet or super hyper salted, like, you know, chicken nuggets and fish sticks or salad dressings that are store-bought that are full of corn syrup because they have to for stabilizing and longevity on the shelf. And they just don't realize that it takes a child's palate and makes it not be able to identify any other types of flavors. So although this is not a healthy cookbook, this is a book about fresh and wholesome foods using as much, you know, as little unnatural and processed products as possible. You'll see, though, in the dessert section, there are desserts with tofu-y cream cheese and sugar and some rich whip. But to me, those are splurge-worthy items. Those are things that I wouldn't make on an everyday basis. They're things I make on Shabbos. So my feeling is, eliminate all the MSG and the overly salted stuff and the sugars out of your regular food. It expands and broadens your interests in general food, and then save your calories and your fat for dessert as much as possible.
Mm-hmm.
That trend has, we've gotten that from our non-Jewish friends in the food world, that things have gotten healthier with paleo and vegan and all those things out there, that people want healthier food. So, you know, my audience wanted it, and that's really where it came from.
Good. Okay, so the cookbook, again, which is called Celebrate Food Shabbos, Food Family Shabbos,
by
Elizabeth Kurz, is to benefit Emunah of America. What is Emunah of America, Elizabeth Kurz?
Emunah of America is an organization that is so dear to my heart, and I'm incredibly proud to partner with them on this project. Emunah is the largest religious social service organization in Israel. They have 5 children's homes, and in Israel, we don't call them orphanages. We call them children's homes because we're always hoping that a child is able to return to their home. So it's really like a temporary home where the children live and go to school and are raised by incredibly special people. Numerous daycare centers where children are dropped off very often in their pajamas, and they are dressed and fed and schooled and then homeworked, and they have basketball and baseball and all sorts of wonderful enrichment, and then brought back to their home in the evening, where parents who have really, for whatever reason, are distressed and are suffering. They have crisis centers in Sderot and places where there is some real terrorism going on. They have a College of the Arts. They have a high school. It really covers every walk of life in Israel, every walk of people who need help. And I'm incredibly proud to have photographed some of the book, cooking with the children that benefit from the Emunah facilities in Israel. And I cooked with the older adults who eat meals at the Golden Age restaurant, and they come for companionship and just to have someone to spend some time with. And they may live on their own, but they're not able to completely take care of themselves. So they go to the Golden Age restaurant and pick up their Shabbos food or have a bite to eat with a friend. And it's an exhilarating and inspiring organization to be a part of.
Wonderful. Okay. And then so the proceeds from this book, this cookbook, Celebrate Food Family Shabbos, are going to go to this wonderful organization then.
Yep. And thank God we've been able to raise a lot of money for these very, very needy children and families in Israel. And to see the children, I brought the project. I went and photographed the book, or some of the book, with the children a year ago, Sukkot. And then the following year, I brought the finished product back to the children so they could see their faces in the book cooking with me. And I wish I'd photographed that part, because to make them feel like celebrities was, you know, my heart was jumping out of my chest. It was so incredible.
Oh, that's wonderful. That is absolutely amazing. Okay, again, so if people want to, like, get a look online, what's your website, Elizabeth Gertz?
My website is gourmetkoshercooking.com. Right now, it will redirect them to gourmetpassovercooking.com. And the book is available, of course, on the Amuna website. It's amuna.org, E-M-U-N-A-H.org, and Amazon, and all your local bookstores. And if you don't mind, I just wanted to add one more thing, or two more things about the book. One is, although it's Celebrate Food Family Shabbos, there are over 100 recipes that are kosher for Passover in the book. And the one other thing that I did add in this book that I think makes it a little different than so many of the wonderful kosher cookbooks we have out there is, again, based on feedback I got from so many readers, is I added a few special sections, a challah section, a kiddush section, and a shalashita section, because more and more people are entertaining at those time periods. You know, in a summer Shabbos, it's sometimes more fun to entertain for shalashita than for Shabbos lunch. And for me, I make very different dishes for shalashitas, different salads, different fishes than I would make for, you know, a Friday night or for a Shabbos day. So it includes lots of recipes and inspiration for those times in our lives as well.
Okay, that's terrific. Elizabeth Kurz, author of Celebrate Food, Family, and Shabbos, thank you so much for coming on. We wish you a happy and a healthy and a kosher Pesach.
Thank you. You too.
Take care. We're going to take a quick commercial break, and we'll be right back. You're listening to The Jewish Hour.
Stop paying more than your fair share of property tax now. I'm Stephen Poulter, attorney at law and president of Express Property Tax Appeals. Right now, your commercial property tax assessments are in the mail. Like many commercial property owners, you're probably paying unnecessary and exorbitant property taxes, potentially costing you hundreds of thousands of dollars every year. Express Property Tax Appeals can help. I recently reduced one of my clients' property tax values by $2 million, realizing $250,000 in real tax dollar savings. I can do the same for you. If you're a commercial property owner, manager, or broker and are tired of paying more than your fair share of property tax, call Express Property Tax Appeals now at 855-LOW-TAX-9 or online at lowtax9.com. That's 855-LOW-TAX-9 or online at lowtax9.com. You have nothing to lose except your looming property tax burden. I'm Stephen Poulter with Express Property Tax Appeals, and I look forward to saving you money on your property taxes.
The Art Studio of Oak Park is now accepting students. Whether you're a real beginner or have been at it for a lifetime, the Art Studio of Oak Park has something for you. All levels welcome, all ages welcome. Private tutoring or small friendly classes. Flexible hours available. The Art Studio of Oak Park is very affordable. Make your life better. Put art into your life. The Art Studio of Oak Park offers lessons in a strictly kosher environment. Call today, 248-542-5087. That's 248-542-5087. It's great having an art room right in the neighborhood.
Hey, Herschel Fidman here. You're listening to The Jewish Hour. That was very exciting. This is a very exciting book, too. And I recommend it. Two thumbs up. Next, we have, for your listening pleasure, I think I might have to do an interview about this one. We might get around to this. This song is called Shine a Little Light. It is written by Rabbi Yitzi Horowitz, who is a Chabad rabbi in California. Rabbi Yitzi Horowitz was diagnosed with ALS, also known as Lou Gehrig's disease, about 5 years ago, and is currently confined to a bed and communicates through eye movements with a computer. So this is a song that he wrote, and this is a song which is sung in a similar manner to We Are the World, where they have like a zillion people doing it. So there's in this song is probably every person that we've ever featured on the Jewish Hour who is alive. So let's listen to Shine a Little Light. Thank you.
trying to be all that you wanna be. But it's so cold now, it's so dark here. What could I do? It's not very clear. If I'm a little light, you're a little light. Together we are so very bright. A little light here, a little light there. See the smiles, it's so very clear. Shine a little light, show us the way. Lead us to a brighter.
Someone you know have an addiction to opiates? Ready to take your life back but don't have the time for a long inpatient program? MDS Drug Detox is a team of physicians with extensive experience in the field of rapid drug detox under anesthesia. MDS is the nation's only rapid opiate detox under anesthesia facility with the same doctors, RNs, and certified paramedics attending the entire drug detox process. MDS Drug Detox is safe and effective. Their goal is to provide the best, the safest, and the most economical way to free you from your addiction. MDS uses the highest standards of care and the best FDA-approved medications. MDS Drug Detox understands what your concerns are. Make the call today, 888-637-6968, or go online to www.mdsdrugdetox.com. That's 888-637-6968, MDS Drug Detox. Hey, Schulfinman here. You're listening to the Jewish Hour. We have up next, there are many Passover liturgical songs and done in many styles and genres. This group is called Shashmakan. They're a famous group from Bukharia, which is Central Asian Russia, and the song is called Yakumin Ki Medonad, which is Echad Mi Yodea, which is Who Knows One, in all those different languages, and it's just for you.
Yakumin Ki Medonad, Yakumin Kan Medonad, Yakumin Kudo Irabu. Do you mean?
și se premișnau.
Of quality and excellence in kosher? Look for the Michigan K on the label. What's it look like? The Lower Peninsula of Michigan with a K. It's a symbol of the Michigan Kosher Supervisors. Go to their website, mikosup.com. That's M-I for Michigan, K-O for kosher, and S-U-P for supervisors, mikosup.com, and find this month's featured products. You'll find Michigan K products wherever fine food is sold, especially at Natural Food Patch on West 9 Mile Road in Ferndale. Herschel Finner, you're listening to the Jewish Hour. It's time for a little Passover parody. So here's Pesach Funk from Michael Harpaz.
Pesach for cups go, holy Moses, Egyptian gold. This one for family, the Haggadah, straight masterpiece. Matzah, Maror, eating it up with the Seder. Got kid along with Saint Laurent. Said, I'll be coming for later. Here comes blood.
Oh, red.
Papa Moses, he's a magician. Frog slice.
On head.
Wild beasts and hail. I said, so dark.
Where's Fred?
Let us go. Pharaoh's got no credit. Firstborn.
He did.
Say, Hebrews, let's start running. Break it down. Jews wrote the hallelujah.
Ooh.
Jews wrote the hallelujah.
Ooh.
Jews wrote the hallelujah.
Ooh.
Cause best I'm gonna go and give it to you.
Ooh.
Cause best I'm with a manischewitz. Take a sip, lean your chest. Yackle it, get the stretch.
Say four questions, the four sons. Four cups are too many.
And we thank God for our freedom. Head into a land of milk and honey. Freedom.
Oh man.
Gonna live my life the best way I can. Freedom.
We can.
Be the Jew in you to a hero man. Freedom.
I am.
Say goodbye to those shackles and freedom.
Hot sand.
Tell me, break it down. Jews wrote the hallelujah.
Ooh.
Jews wrote the hallelujah.
Ooh.
Jews wrote the hallelujah.
Ooh.
Cause Pesach fun, gon' give it to ya.
Ooh.
Cause Pesach fun, gon' give it to ya. Hey, hey.
Why go to a hospital to get healthy? At Encompass Healthcare, you get the state-of-the-art wound care like in a hospital. The same medicines, the same everything without being in a hospital. Why put yourself at risk of getting a hospital-borne infection? Did you know that last year, 1 in 6 people died in America because of infections they got in hospitals? Encompass Healthcare is an outpatient facility. That means you get your wound care treatment and then go home. There are no wait times at Encompass Healthcare like in ERs. Healthcare is personal and works better, faster, and easier. Encompass Healthcare provides a state-of-the-art outpatient facility close to where you live. Call 248-624-9800. That's 624-9800. Auto accident, workman's comp, and most insurance is accepted. Encompass Healthcare's goal is to get you healthy with as little disturbance to your daily activities. Call 248-624-9800.
Herschel Finman here. You are listening to the Jewish Hour. The portion of the week is Metzora. It is found in Leviticus chapter 14 and following, and comes in conjunction with the previous week's portion of Tazria, which talks about, whereas in last week's portion it talked about diagnosing someone with the skin malaise called tsaras, in this week's portion it talks about what to do once one has this dread malaise. The portion is called Metzora, which means the person who has tsaras. I've stopped translating tsaras because tsaras doesn't exist in English. It was a biblical thing. It stopped, people stopped getting it 2,200 years ago. It was a spiritual thing that afflicted a person physically. So just call it tsaras. I'm reminded that I used to go to, was a chaplain in prisons. And so when you go into a prison, you have to tell them what it is you're bringing in and which of those things you're bringing in, you're leaving and which you're taking out. So whenever I would go into a prison, if it was a male prisoner, men's prison, I would bring in my tefillin. Now, the English word for tefillin is phylactery. And I would write down, because these people don't speak Hebrew, I would write down the word phylactery. And every single time I wrote down the word phylactery, well, Ben, have you ever heard the word phylactery before?
Ben, no, I have not.
Ben has never heard the word phylactery, right? It's an English word, supposedly. But so they would say, what are phylacteries? So I got to the point where I just write in. If you can ask me what it is, I might as well just write down the word tefillin. So it's a men's prayer item, so which men put on in the morning. And people in prison don't have them, so we give them the opportunity. So same thing with tsaras and metzora. These things do not exist in English, and there's no point in describing them using any type of synonyms because it's not leprosy, it's not psoriasis, it's not anything that it exists. The previous Lubavitcher Rebbe had a very good eye at looking at things. See, he actually, when he was a little kid, maybe 3-4 years old, he asked his father, why do people need two eyes? Why don't we just have, say, like an eye in the center of our forehead? Maybe he was reading Cyclops, I doubt. And his father told him that the right eye is for looking at another person, and the left eye is for looking at a piece of candy or a toy. Okay, meaning to say that you're supposed to look at another person in a gracious way, in a formidable way, in a good way, in a positive way, and the physical worldly pleasures around, look at in a left way, be more discerning with them. So we have to like two personalities. This was his modus operandi. And so when it came to things like Torah, he actually didn't like that the portion was called Metzora, meaning the leper. So he called it Parshas Tahara. Okay, now he couldn't change the name of the portion because I believe that the names of the portion were either given by Moses or by Ezra. And either way, we're not going to argue. So, but he wanted to say that everything good should be conveyed in an absolutely good way. And what was going on in the portion was not talking about a Metzora, a person who had this malaise, but rather was talking about how to get rid of it. So therefore, it should be looked as though we should be getting rid of it. That was the deal with the portion. We can kind of hook this up in with Passover. Because Passover, one of the things we have to get rid of is all of our chametz, our leavening. And it's described in Hasidic philosophy that what's the spiritual leavening, which I talked about earlier, just happened to mention in passing with our interview with Elizabeth Kurtz, is a feeling of blown-uppedness, of arrogance, of one-upmanship. It says the matzahs are flat, and we should learn, take a lesson from the matzah, to flatten our egos, you might say. And then we can look at people with the right eye. We're going to take a quick commercial break, and we will be right back. You're listening to The Jewish Hour.
Hi, this is Spex Howard from the Spex Howard School of Broadcast Arts. We're happy to sponsor The Jewish Hour and bring quality radio programming to the community. While much of the funding for The Jewish Hour comes from its sponsors, it's listeners like you that help keep The Jewish Hour on the air. Please send your tax-deductible donation to The Jewish Hour, 14,000 West 9 Mile Road, Oak Park, Michigan, 48237. That's 14,000 West 9 Mile Road, Oak Park, Michigan, 48237. Your help is greatly appreciated.
Herschel Finman here. You're listening to The Jewish Hour. If you want to get in touch with me, the number is, not the number is, the way to do that is RabbiFinman.com. What will you find at RabbiFinman.com? You'll find a way to contact me, of course, because that's the way I'm directing you. You'll find archived editions of the show, archived editions of the U-Parsha, Hasidic U-Story, the E-Parsha, different media in which we try to convey Judaism in a most enjoyable and educational way. You'll also find the very important donations page. We're approaching now the middle of the month. And believe it or not, we're about, just like today's the 10th. So we're just about, the 15th would be halfway. I'd say we're just about where we would be if we had to raise a certain amount of money every single day to be able to pay for the show at the end of the month. So I would say we are about there. Maybe a little bit more than a third collected for April. And we're doing it because people like you who are listening are going to the computer, going to RabbiFinman.com, clicking on the donations page, and making a donation of whatever amount you happen to want to give. And don't think it has to be hundreds of thousands of dollars, which of course would be graciously accepted. There are any amount, because if all the people listening to this show would pledge even $5 a month forever, so I wouldn't have to do this because there's a lot of people listening. And there are a lot of people who are not anteing up, you might say. So if you've given before, that's great. If you can give again, that's good. That would be awesome. If you've never given, it's time. We need you to give. We want to keep it. We're in our 21st year. Indeed. If this was a human being, we could almost buy alcohol. Yes. That's a weird way of looking at things. So do it today. Go to RabbiFinman.com, and then I would have more time to tell the stories, because this one I'm going to have to cut out a little bit. The city of Dachsitz, Poland, which is located in western Poland, somewhere near, kind of close to Germany, had a Hasidic rabbi. His name was Yochanan Gordon. He was actually the shochet. And it once happened that he had to leave town for a certain specific period of time. And he left his number two shochet, his number two ritual slaughter in command, and said, if you have a problem, go to so-and-so the tailor, so-and-so the shoemaker, or so-and-so the carpenter. And he said, I shouldn't go to the rabbi? And this Rabbi Gordon said, the rabbi doesn't know the laws of ritual slaughter. So it just so happened that there was a problem, and the problem became public. And there was a whole hue and outcry because this slaughterer didn't think it was a problem. And other people who were around said, that's a major problem. So what did he do? He went first to the tailor. And the tailor kind of like stopped what he was doing, put his head on his elbow and said, in the entire Babylonian Talmud, this would not be a problem. And then he put his hand on his other arm and then said, in the entire Jerusalem Talmud, this is for sure not a problem. It's okay. And this story repeated itself with the other two people. So here we have these three people, a tailor, a shoemaker, and a carpenter. And they knew the whole entire Torah inside out. That's going to do it for us. We're going to have to take have to let us go now. It's so much fun. We hope we had a chance to entertain you a bit. We hope we had a chance to educate you a bit. We hope to see you back again next week. Take care.